and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. I'm Lindsay Hooper and it's double trouble this week. Look who's back alongside me.
Hello, it's me, Kate Borsay. Hurrah, I'm so glad to make a WSL show. I've not been stranded in France, I've not been caught doing up some sun loungers or rescuing a husband that's been caught for speeding. I'm back.
I didn't know whether you were going to reveal that.
Oh, yeah.
Good to have you
back.
Why not?
We're all real, aren't we? We're here to bring you all the action and reaction to a week in women's football, which saw round three of the Continental Cup spring a couple of surprises.
Contrasting fortunes as well for British teams in the Champions League.
And the announcement of Phil Neville's latest Lionesses squad for this week's record-breaking night at Wembley.
Well, in the studio with us today, it's a huge hello to Kieran Tavam. Hello.
Hello, guys. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you back. I think we should start with, where were you this weekend?
I was at Lewis FC. Lovely down there at the Dripping Pan. Brilliant name for a stadium. I always like the name, the Dripping Pan.
And by all accounts, it was dripping.
It was. Oh, my God. It was relentless. I felt so sorry for those players out there. But do you know what? Fair play to both sets of players and also to the over 1,000 people that turned up as well. I thought when I saw that weather, I was like, there's no way they're going to get a crowd for this one. And they did. But yeah, down in Lewis for the Athletic. And yeah, nice down there. Always feel welcome.
We'll talk more about that in a little while. A couple of great articles from you recently. In fact, you've been outputting lots of quality content for The Athletic, which is always great to read. And what's nice is there are stories there that you wouldn't necessarily know. I think, you know, we've covered women's football for a while, but Kieran is one of the dons of women's football and remembers, you know, decades back rather than us mere years.
I love these little gems that you dig out. Like, one of my favourites from this week was the Google Translate story with West Ham.
Just tell us about that for those who aren't reading The Athletic yet.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's no denying that I never, and I say this all the time, we don't suggest that what we do is better, we just say that what we do is different. And because we're behind a paywall, we need to try and think a little bit outside the box. So you have to think about things that maybe people aren't reading elsewhere. So I pitched the idea to the editors about, look, West Ham United have 16 players from overseas. How does a women's club accommodate that? They don't have the resource of a men's team. How do they deal with Cho So-hyun coming from South Korea, or how do they deal with someone like that who doesn't speak the language, who doesn't know the culture, who is trying to fit into a team with so many different languages around her? So I went down to their training ground and found out. I spoke to the GM, I spoke to Matt Beard, I spoke to a couple of the players just to find out a little bit about how you settle into a women's team when you have so many different nationalities and their general manager is essentially wearing a number of different hats. He's a taxi driver for taking them to the airport. He's helping with contracts. He's helping them find accommodation, helping them open bank accounts. It's crazy, but those are the sorts of things that we don't necessarily know about and the things that I try and go out there and write about.
Having been in France for 5 weeks this summer with the Lionesses covering the World Cup, I did rely on Google Translate myself, and I would say it can be a dangerous territory.
All right, well, lots more great nuggets to come from Kieran and also us, of course, as we talk Continental Cup. We're going to be digesting the Champions League as well, Lindsay, and looking forward to that Lionesses game and catching up with a bit of news on Scotland as well. So let's get cracking.
So as Kate mentioned, it was back to the Continental Cup this weekend. We're going to have a closer look in detail, starting with Saturday's matches. Chelsea winning 2-1 at Lewis. Now, despite the weather's best efforts, as Kieran was there trying to dodge all the rain, there was a late pitch inspection. The game did go ahead in front of just over, I saw that you tweeted this, just over 1,000 fans. Let's talk about the actual match itself. Chelsea were made to work hard for this victory, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And I think, you know, I've written a piece that's gone out today on The Athletic of how do you prepare to play against a team that you're not expected to beat. And that's exactly what Lewis had to do. They had to go into a game where no one expected them to win. And, you know, Chelsea scored very early on inside the first 15 minutes through Erin Cuthbert. And you kind of think when they score that early that it could be the floodgates opening, pardon the pun, based on the weather that was there. But do you know what? Lewis responded really, really well. And, you know, credit to them. They set up in a slightly different way. They played with five at the back and didn't move their wing backs up that much. So they tried to stifle Chelsea out and out wide. So they had to play through the middle. And actually, you know, rather than Chelsea going on to extend their lead, it was Lewis that levelled it up. And it was a beauty from Katie Rood.
It was brilliant from Katie Rood. And it's no mean feat to get one past Carly Telford, is it? And she stole it off Millie Brighton. Off she went. Great pace up the flank, cut back and curled it past Telford. And actually, Katie will be really pleased with that goal as well. You know, for her, definitely one of the highlights of the season so far to be able to do that against such a strong Chelsea side.
Yeah, because you want to make sure that the game is as close as possible for as long as possible, because as I say, if Chelsea get a second or third, all of a sudden you wonder if it could go on to be five or six. But that leveller made it a completely different game. You know, that allowed Lewis to maybe defend a little bit deeper and try and catch Chelsea on the counter. And it wasn't until, 10 minutes before the end when Magdalena Eriksson was able to get the winner. But fair play to Faye Baker as well in Lewis's goal. She made some outstanding saves over the 90 minutes.
So a 100% record then for Chelsea in the Cup. That continues. One of the things that I took away from this when you compare the league form is Chelsea having that ability to kill off games, that 80th minute winner coming. And something that we didn't see, we will move on to it later, but with Arsenal, they didn't have that killer touch this week.
Yeah, and Emma Hayes said it post-match to me. She said, I think last season we would have drawn this game. This is the difference that we've got. We're able to see off games. And, you know, she was very, very complimentary of Lewis. She didn't want to take anything away from them, but obviously very pleased to get the win. And she took that game seriously. You know, she had 9 senior internationals in her starting 11. So she didn't, despite the comments that she's had about the Continental Cup, they don't necessarily relate to the competition itself. It's the way that it's scheduled that she has a problem. Mm. But she took it seriously and she put a strong team out.
We know that there are various chants that go around at the Dripping Pan. We've had Sophie Lawson here in the studio, fresh off 2 visits to Lewis. She was talking about their crowd and actually some really nice messages over social media from Chelsea players to Lewis, thanking them for their hospitality and saying what a great game it was. And I thought that is a huge compliment, that actually, despite the torrential rain and the wind and everything else there, it sounds like both teams had a really good game and really enjoyed themselves. Mm. Just a bit on the atmosphere from you, Kieran. You are a well-travelled man in terms of women's football.
Do you know what? It, as I say, over 1,000 people in pretty horrendous weather, the Lewis fans did make it a good atmosphere. And actually, when you see Katie Rood's goal on social media, you can hear the response when that ball hits the back of the net. You know, they were enthusiastic. They were getting behind the team. They did chant and shout for 90 minutes. They really do get behind their team. There's a very big community feel to Lewis. You know, it's almost that feeling of we're in this together.
Mm. They're 100% fan-owned, aren't
exactly.
they? They own it together.
Exactly. So it's slightly different. You know, I really enjoy going down there. You're made to feel very welcome. They make a lot of effort off the field.
Drums as well.
They didn't have drummers this week.
Okay, fine.
So it's interesting. They didn't have the drummers this week, and I think they would have had more people. But there is a number of, what I'm told, is bonfire kind of societies and groups down in Lewis. They're very proud of their kind of bonfire tradition.
This is terrific, isn't it?
And they had a number. Unfortunately, there were meetings that were taking place on Saturday to kind of get, you know, be prepared for bonfire night. So people
I
like the drummers.
Athletic article coming.
Yeah, I know. But so there were no drummers there, and there were people missing. And I know that you know Lewis were maybe a little bit concerned that because of the weather and obviously with people being in these bonfire societies that maybe they wouldn't be at the game. But as I say, great.
The
crowd.
Steel drums and lots of rain perhaps don't mix.
Well, maybe it's needless to say that they missed the fireworks on the pitch, didn't they?
Oh no, and one firework that not good news for Chelsea. Maria Therese de Teer, she tweeted out, didn't she, last Tuesday? So she's got a fractured bone in her leg. This is from last week in training. Now, do you know much about what happened in training with this injury? Because she's saying 2020 I'm coming for you. So obviously ruled herself out until at least the new year.
Yeah, she's out for 10 to 12 weeks, I believe. I think it's just a training ground accident. And blow for them, because Maria has had a couple of injuries since she's been at Chelsea, but you know, she got the winner against Arsenal a few weeks ago, and you kind of felt that might be the thing that springboards her season. And unfortunately, she's gone down with an injury. They're going to lose her for a little while until the new year. And probably one of the few clubs that can manage an injury like that is Chelsea. They've got a big squad and they've got a lot of depth, so I think they'll be okay. But obviously disappointing for her, because she's a good player. I really rate Maria, and I think that she will be a loss, but I think Chelsea will cope. And obviously as well, we have to factor in that there is a short winter break that comes for the women's season, so hopefully that will give her a few weeks to get better and be back after that.
Well, here at the Offside Rule, we wish her a very speedy recovery. One final word on Lewis, because it's Christmas coming. The countdown is on. My partner loves Christmas. It's like the weeks, the days circled on the calendar.
I love Christmas too.
You can become a single share owner for
£40
a year.
Yes. Yeah.
At Lewis. It's not a bad present if you like your women's football.
It's a really good idea for you, actually. Although you have got a new house to fill with things like extensions and, I don't know, staircases and.
Yeah, but we don't want any tat. I'd quite like just to have something where I don't have to have something in the house. right, we'll move on to Aston Villa against Liverpool then. Oh, I don't even know when this win's going to come. I'm looking, you're shaking your head as well, Kieran. So Saturday's other clash, they did see Liverpool's woes continue, beaten 2-0 by Villa. Goals from Emma Follis and Emily Syme sealed the 3 points for the home side. Follis scoring after just 6 minutes. And I think that was part of the key, that you could tell from the offset, from kickoff, that this is a team, Liverpool, that are just so low in confidence.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't know where the win's coming from, and I don't know why they're struggling so badly, because in my mind, they have a good head coach in Vicky Jepson, and that team is better than what they're showing at the moment in terms of the personnel that they've got. I think you're right. I think it comes down to confidence. I think, unfortunately, off the back of last season, and then, you know, the way they've started this, it almost feels like they've forgotten how to win. When I look at the personnel that they have and I look at the head coach that they have, I'm struggling to kind of get a grasp as to why they are performing so poorly. And as I say, it was off the back of last season as well. They didn't have a great season last year either. I think it's doubly disappointing when you look at how the men's team is performing and has been performing over the last 2 or 3 years. I don't know why they can't maybe give them a little bit more resource to try and bring that team back to where they were 5 years ago, where they were winning league titles and in the Champions League.
I don't think we should take too much from this result, though, because if you were to compare league form, you would take a team that's bottom of effectively the Women's Premier League, and you look at Aston Villa top of the Championship, and you think that was always going to be a tough ask, because Aston Villa, their confidence is going to be completely in contrast. They've won all of their games so far this season, bar a loss to Durham in the first match day. So you would really have fancied them, I think, just as a neutral coming into this, wouldn't you, to potentially get the win?
Yeah, and Liverpool lost to Sheffield United in the Continental Cup, and they're lower than Aston Villa in the Championship. So it wasn't a surprise, I'll be honest with you.
No.
I saw that fixture, and I think a lot of us thought, you know what, Villa will probably win this one.
Yeah.
And that's a combination of, as you say, they are flying at the moment. They've got a very informed striker in Mel Johnson, who I spoke to up at their training ground a few weeks ago. You know, they are brimming with confidence. They're getting a lot of support from the men's side. They've got access to the training ground and facilities that the men have got now. So they are flying, and I dare say we will probably see them in the Super League next year.
Let's move on to Sunday then. Nick Cushing had a few positive takeaways as his Manchester City side earned all 3 points courtesy of a 2-1 win over Birmingham. Good news for Ellen White. She scored her first goal for the Sky Blues since her summer move, scoring against her former club after Rachel Williams equalised. Caroline Weir then scored the winner with a goal of the month contender.
It was good.
Slight frustration from all of us, I think, guys, before we head into this game, too much about, you know, and we say this a lot, but the lack of access to match reports, to tables. Yeah, I don't know what website I managed to pull those tables off, the Conti Cup standings.
It's just not easy, and the fact that we're looking for it speaks volumes. Yeah.
And then also, of course, watching the games, I saw stuff from Manchester United. I saw Katie Rood's goal for Lewis against Chelsea, but it's just so patchy, isn't it?
I had a bit of a dig with Kieran outside at Everton because there was nothing really on their Twitter either. But I mean, I know it's not just them, it's across the board really that needs to be better. But you would hope that, you know, we've got to a level now where we can at least get match reports and final scores and things.
Yeah. So Ellen White, how did she look, and what worked well for her in this one, Kieran?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key thing for Ellen is minutes. You know, she's coming back off of a bad injury, and I managed to watch them in the Champions League against Atletico Madrid. I managed to find a stream, and she, you know, she got some minutes in that game, and then obviously played at the weekend. I think, you know, she offers a genuine threat. There are few Ellen Whites in this league. So to have a player like her available again, will it takes defenders' attention away from other players. And it may well be that Ellen isn't necessarily scoring every week, but with defenders focusing on her, it may open up opportunities for other players. And as much as I like Janine Becky, I've spoken about her before, and I think it's a big year for her, but she's not quite in Ellen's league yet.
She isn't.
Is Ellen looking like she's slotting in seamlessly to their system, to the way that they want to play?
Yeah, I think Ellen will slot into any system. She's that type of player. She is known for being one of the hardest workers in whatever team that she's in, and she will be one of those that will find a way to slot in, even if it doesn't necessarily naturally suit her game. But I think Man City will be a good fit for her when you look at the players around her. They will give her that central striker role that will allow her to try and get in the box and get opportunities. And at clubs in the past, notably Arsenal, very, you know, a long time ago, I remember she started up front as a number nine, but towards the end of her career ended up out on the wing and it just didn't suit her. So she will get the number nine slot. She will get the opportunities because of the players around her, and I'm sure she'll be a success there.
Caroline Weir, still got that grumpy goal celeb slate on Twitter.
You really want that changed. Is this your mission in life to get them to change
I think it must have become a long-running joke, because anyone who scores a goal like that doesn't need to look as grumpy and as less enthused to have scored such a great goal on their Twitter feed as she does. So I would like some answers, please, Manchester City.
Can we have a word on Birmingham as well? Because I thought that this was one of the few performances from the bits that I've seen and the bits that I've read that they started to click a bit more.
And it was always going to take time. I think they had such an overhaul of their squad in the summer. They had to bring so many new players in. It was always going to take a little bit of time for them to gel and to be able to, I guess, to get to know each other as well. You know, ultimately, when you have so many different players leaving and then a whole new bunch coming in, ultimately, you have to learn, you know, the players' strengths and weaknesses. You have to know what suits them and their best role within the team. So I think it was always going to take Birmingham a little bit of time. I did tip them as one of the teams that I felt would maybe struggle a little bit this year because of the overhaul of the squad. But yeah, look, to lose 2-1 at Manchester City is not a disgrace. Their focus is trying to get more points in the league. They got their first win a couple of weeks ago, and ultimately they need to try and push on and try and build on that. I don't think the Continental Cup is necessarily a priority for them.
Right, on to Reading and West Ham, where West Ham won 1-0. They ended Reading's 100% start to the Conti Cup, but the only goal of the game from Alicia Lehmann in the second half, and their first win in the competition. Alicia, by the way, loving scoring against Reading, Kate. That was her fourth goal in 3 matches.
Yeah, and it was a show of skills from all involved, really, for her goal. Great delivery by goalkeeper Anna Moorhouse, flicked on by Tessel Middag, picked up by Leanne Kiernan, who found Lehmann with pinpoint precision. So it was a lovely goal. And I think Lehmann could have had more in this game as well. It was a pretty cagey affair. Lehmann had a good chance in the first half, hitting the crossbar, and another one midway through the second half, but she went wide with that one. Interesting from Matt Beard, though. He started off with a different formation of 3-4-3, but he did go to 5 at the back after half time as well. And he just said that he wanted to have a little tinker around, really, when he spoke about it after the game. So a good one for West Ham, this one, Kieran. What's your take on them? Because they've been so topsy-turvy so far this season.
Yeah, they're the hardest team in the league to predict, I think. And when I went down to Rush Green, their training ground, and spoke to Matt for the piece that we talked about earlier, you know, he is very open about the fact that they're a little bit inconsistent at the moment. And I think that's something that he's trying to get his head round and trying to find a way to make them more consistent. Because there's no denying that that team has an awful lot of talent. Players like Alicia, who is a Swiss international and has really settled into the Women's Super League very quickly, despite only being, 20 years old. To be able to attract a player of Kenza Dali's ability, you know, France international is, you know, she would fit into most teams in the Women's Super League.
You must read the Kenza Dali interview that Susie Rack's done for The Guardian, by the way. It's a fantastic piece.
Yeah, very, very good. And I think that they may be in a little bit of a similar situation to a team like Birmingham, where they have a number of new players and they kind of need to gel and they need to get used to each other. And it's almost maybe a little bit more difficult because, as I mentioned, they have, you know, 16 players from overseas speaking, I think it's 8 different languages.
It's insane, isn't it?
So, you know, they need a little bit of time, but they've got talent. And I think defensively, I was a little bit critical of West Ham last year. I think they struggled a little bit, but I think they've been a little bit better this year. And, you know, Gilly Flaherty was missing at the weekend. I'm sure it will be a big boost when she comes back. And I think, you know, they're just outside those top 4 or 5 teams.
Well, Gilly will be back for the Women's Football Weekend in less than a couple of weeks, actually. West Ham also without leading scorer Martha Thomas for that game against Reading, but she should be back soon. She's got a foot issue. It's taken her out of contention for Scotland. Let's move on then to Brighton-Arsenal. Quite a dramatic one, this one, in the end. Arsenal's perfect start in the Conti Cup came to an end for this one. They remained top of Group B despite dropping points. The game ended goalless after 90 minutes, heading straight to penalties where Hope Powell's side won 4-2. That saw the Seagulls collect 2 points for a draw and a penalty win. And of course, Arsenal get a point for that one. So what was it about Brighton that they clinched in this match to be able to see it through to 0-0 at full time, Linz?
Well, I felt, and I don't know whether you're going to agree with me, Kieran, that they were way better in terms of organisation. And I felt that they had the measure of Arsenal and where their threats were coming from. And I think that's Hope Powell identifying those. They were very difficult to break down. They didn't really let Arsenal have the width of the pitch like we're used to seeing. And that was one of the things that struck me.
Yeah, the result didn't surprise me. I think, you know, let's not forget that Brighton held Chelsea in the league earlier this season, and it's very Hope Powell to set up a well-organised defence and a well-organised block to try and, you know, keep out the opposition. I know, having spoken to some of her former England internationals, that at times they felt maybe she went in a little bit defensive, but it's Hope's strength. You know, ultimately, that's one of the areas that she has always been quite successful in, almost frustrating the opposition. Mm. And you know, Brighton have to do that. If you look at the 11s of the two teams that went out on Sunday, it's not easy to come up against the team of internationals that Arsenal have. So you have to almost dig in a little bit and play a little bit more defensive than maybe you would like to. But I think credit to them, you know, to hold, not just to draw with Arsenal, but to keep them out for 90 minutes. That's not easy.
Yeah. Next up then, Bristol City 1, London City Lionesses 1. And Bristol City did meet the same fate as Brighton against their second tier London City Lionesses. At London side, they prevailed on penalties as well, 4-3 this one, despite seeing Leanne Cowan's early strike cancelled out by Charlie Wellings on the hour. So I think one thing to say here, Bristol, they wanted to continue that good form that they've had in the competition. They won both their first two games, but they couldn't maintain that.
No, and I think, you know, despite their best efforts, some good substitutions at half-time from Tanya Oxtoby and Bristol City. She brought on Flo Allen, Carla Humphrey and Abby Harrison, and that meant that the scores went level. Charlie Wellings, as you said, with that goal, but they couldn't finish the job off, really. I think that that was the issue. And credit to London City Lionesses as well, Kieran. Still without a permanent manager, aren't they, after sacking Chris Phillips after just six league games?
Yeah, we're still trying to get our head around London City Lionesses a little bit. We had a media day with them just before the season started to be introduced to some of the players, because obviously they essentially overhauled the whole squad, and you know, they were Millwall Lionesses before, and there was a big hoo-ha over the big change and this, the license being transferred to London City Lionesses. So yeah, not sure about the decision over the head coach. It kind of came out of the blue. They're doing well in the Championship. I'm not really sure what
I'm
not sure what the expectations were before the season started, so there's clearly more to it than that. But yeah, look, a good result for them against a Women's Super League side. They clearly have a lot of talent in their team, some good Championship experience in that side, a couple of players that have played in the Women's Super League as well. Good result for them.
Yeah. Keeper Lucy Thomas was the heroine, really, for London City Lionesses, pulling off two penalty saves from Carla Humphrey and Olivia Chance.
Everton 0, Manchester United 3, another result. Manchester United picked up a second successive Conti Cup win of the season with that dominant display away at Everton. 3-0 winners in Southport with goals from Lauren James, Katie Zellum and Amy Turner. You think that this scoreline, though, when you look at it, it could have been even worse for Everton by all accounts.
Yeah, Manchester United continue to do what we expect from them. They're very, very solid. Lauren James is one of the best players in the league. I'm quite happy to say that on record in terms of talent. I think we're going to see her in an England squad in the next year or two, without a doubt. She scored again. I really rate Katie Zellum as well. I think she's been unfortunate not to get an England call-up. I think she should have been in the squad for the Germany game, but I do understand that Phil doesn't want players necessarily for a big occasion like that who've not played before. But yeah, I think Casey Stoney deserves a lot of credit. As I say, I think they are beating the teams that maybe we expect them to, and I would put Everton in that category at the moment, and maybe falling a little bit short against the sides that maybe they don't. But look, I think that they have a chance in this competition, for sure.
Chloe Kelly getting sent off for Everton, not good for them.
No, I mean, that did pile on the woes. It could have been 5 or 6 goals. It could have been. But, you know, you have those results sometimes. They're just going to have to bounce back from it. Crystal Palace 0, Tottenham 3. Next one, Kate.
Yeah, well, Tottenham made it look easy in clocking up a 3-0 win at Crystal Palace. Late goals from Kit Graham and Lucy Gwynn after Anna Philby's early opener. Very decent showing so far in the league from Tottenham. Then they sit 6th in the WSL. It's their first outright win, though, in this Conti Cup.
We had 3 all-championship clashes too. Durham picked up a convincing 4-0 victory over Coventry, while Sheffield United beat Blackburn 4-1. Lots of goals in that game. Rich Laverty was predicting a Stern test when we spoke to him last week on the show, but that was a really good result for the Blades. And in the other all-London encounter, London Bees were victorious in a penalty shootout with Charlton after it finished 0-0 as well in regular time.
Well, the next round of Continental Cup ties will be played on the weekend of the 20th and the 21st of November. That'll be the penultimate group stage match.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition from Muddy Knees Media.
The Champions League was back in midweek. Manchester City and Arsenal were looking to book their places in the quarterfinals of the competition. Let's remind ourselves of that lovely music.
feeling all rejuvenated and buoyed up now, but not by the result for Manchester City. This will go... They are out of the competition. They headed out to Atletico Madrid with all to play for, 1-1 from the first leg, but that dangerous away goal proved to be a step too far for Nick Cushing's side. They were beaten 2-1 on the night by the Spanish champions. England captain Steph Horton's first half own goal, Atletico skipper Angela Souza's close range finish gave the host control in the last 16 tie. Pauline Bremer did pull back a goal late on, but it was too little too late for the Mancunians. They are knocked out for the second season in a row by the same team, Atletico.
Yeah, I think we're seeing similar patterns, aren't we, with the men's team in Europe, Kieran?
Yeah, I watched, well, both legs online, and the second leg especially. I know Nick Cushing said post-match that he felt his team dominated. I think there were periods where they dominated, but I actually thought Atletico were the better team over the two legs. They have a very, very talented side. Obviously, Tony Duggan plays for them. A lot of people will know about her from her England days and Manchester City days. But I honestly thought that Atletico were the deserving over the two legs. And Manchester City will need to find a way, if they qualify next season, to try and get over that hurdle. Because to be knocked out 2 years running by Atleti will be disappointing for them. And I think what will be most disappointing is that other than Paulina Bremer's goal and a couple of chances here and there, they may have dominated in areas of the field, but I don't recall them having a huge number of chances.
It was much better news in the Champions League, though, for Arsenal. Halloween didn't spook them at all, did it? They put just the 8 past Slavia Prague to win 13-2 on aggregate. I'd say that's pretty convincing against their Czech opponents. Hat-tricks for both Daniela van der Donk and Vivian Miedemar, topped off with goals from Jill Roord and Kim Little. You know, I love what Tom Dean spoke to Daniela van der Donk about last week on the podcast, when she said that Vivian gives the side a lot of air. You can breathe with her in the team, was the quote from Daniela van der Donk.
That freedom that she gives
other
players.
To us, it was awesome. What about Glasgow City? They did it the hard way, but what a great game this was. After letting their 2-0 aggregate slip, there was a standout performance from goalkeeper Lee Alexander to help them edge past Bromby on penalties. It went all the way to the wire, this one, to reach the Champions League quarterfinals for just the second time in their history.
Joe Love, 12 yards, the quarterfinals. She's done it! It wasn't easy at the PZ, but Glasgow City are a Champions League quarterfinal team once again. 5 years on for the last time. It wasn't any less easy this time around, but they've done it. What a story at Petershill Park.
Well, let's welcome back our Scottish expert, Chris Marshall, to reflect on that amazing result. And only the second time in history, Chris, that they've made it into the last eight. So how's this result being viewed and talked about in Scotland?
Very positively. As you say, it's only second time in history. Last time it was 2015, where they were eliminated by Paris Saint-Germain. I think there's a real understanding how big an achievement this is, especially when you look at the money that's now going into the bigger leagues across Europe and the level of catch-up that Scotland was going to have to play very soon. I think the speed that it's going at is really quick at the moment. So there's a lot of recognition for that. The players at the end of the game were kind of half disbelief, half excited, half knew that they could do it. There's a real togetherness with that Glasgow City squad that makes them stand out. And with the bigger challenges that are to come, both domestically and in Europe, that togetherness is really going to keep them in good stead.
Big teams left in that competition. If you were in charge and you wanted a team of the teams that are left, who would you want?
Should we read them out? We've got Arsenal, PSG, Atletico Madrid, Lyon, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Wolfsburg. Take your pick, Christopher.
I think there's probably an understanding from everybody that whoever it's going to be, it might not be pretty. However, I know, speaking to some of the players after the game Thursday night, there's a fondness for them to get Arsenal because there's a good Scottish connection there, obviously, with the players that are down there from the national side. And obviously, they feel like they owe them one a little bit from previous campaigns. Personally, I would love to see Lyon come up to Petershill Park in Glasgow, see a team like that in the surroundings of what is essentially a non-league ground in Scotland, I think would be something fantastic to see. But yeah, whoever they're going to get, it's going to be a massive challenge. It's a long time away now. It's not until March. And obviously with that, things can change in terms of the shape of the squad and what happens with the players that are there at the moment.
And of course, Scotland as well play Albania this week in Euro 2021 qualifying Group E.
Yeah, Chris, just give us a quick word on that one. Thoughts about qualifying for Euro 2021 in Scotland?
I think we're in a good position. We obviously had the privilege of being top seeds, and we've got a group with Finland and Portugal in it, both teams that we'll fancy. This game against Albania coming up is a very special one, obviously, because that's where Scotland sealed their first World Cup place. So you've got to be positive with it. We've got a good squad, and obviously we've got players playing all over the world now. So yeah, I'm confident with it, but obviously we'll see what happens on Friday night.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition with me, Lindsay Hooper, Kate Borsay and Kieran Tavim. And we're going to talk more about that international break, which is upon us. It's an extra special one for the Lionesses, who on Saturday evening will be playing Germany at a sold out Wembley Stadium. I guess the first talking point there is, how many do we think we're going to get? Because 80,000 tickets have been sold. To break the record, it's got to be around 46,000, doesn't it?
Yeah, so 45,619 to be precise, is the record attendance for an England home game at Wembley. That was November 2014. Can you believe that? Before the World Cup in Canada. But those fans, as you pointed out on Twitter, Kieran Tavim, I saw it. In fact, I think it was even in capitals, was it? They have to turn up.
Yes, they have to turn up. It's one of my biggest bugbears with the women's game, in that people will buy cheap tickets or be given freebies and then decide on the day that if the weather's not good or they've got something better to do, that they don't turn up. The difference with this one is that it wasn't free. I'm sure there are some free tickets that have been given out, but I think it was £15 for adults. My hope is that that is deemed enough to be justified as, you know, I've spent my money, I'm going to now turn up. I think when it's a fiver or even a tenner, people can kind of decide on the day, do you know what, I haven't spent a huge amount of money on it, I'm not going to go. We want a big atmosphere. The whole point of having the game at Wembley is to see if we can fill it as much as possible so that we have more games like this. You know, as you mentioned there, it's been 5 years since we had the last one. 45,000, so we're talking, what, nearly half full. It will break the record. I think we're pretty confident in that. But I think, you know, whether we get 80,000 plus turning up, I will reserve judgment on that for now. But yes, I want people to turn up. I want it to be a big occasion for everyone so that we potentially have more games at Wembley.
An interesting talking point around the game, Kieran, is to do with a Manchester United player, because we know how well they've done in the league. We've been talking about it on the podcast pretty much every week this season. They have impressed. And so, of course, players catch the eye as well. And winger Leah Galton,
who I love,
who has been sensational for them. She was being considered for these two friendlies against Germany and Czech Republic. Now, she's yet to appear for England after she actually withdrew from her first senior call-up to a training camp with former manager Mark Sampson back in 2016, and that was because of a hip injury. But a really interesting way that Casey Stoney is managing this, because she's only just apparently fallen back in love with the game. So the underlying comment there is that there's obviously some stuff that's been going on.
Yeah.
She fell out of love with the game a little bit, is coming back now, is playing really, really well. But I think Casey very much wants to manage how she's introduced back to the England fold.
Yeah, it's smart management by Casey, isn't it? And Leah didn't just fall out of love with the game. She fell out of the game.
Yeah.
She wasn't involved for a little while. She had a really, really good career at Sky Blue FC in the United States after being drafted out of Hofstra University, I think it was, off the top of my head. And she lit up the NWSL. I'm quite happy to say that. She was phenomenal and deserved the England call-up that she got under Mark Sampson. I think it was injury that meant she had to pull out of a camp. She then moved to Bayern Munich, and that move didn't work out. And it was after the move to Bayern Munich that she decided to take a break from the game. Now, you know, I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. If she is now playing well for Manchester United and wants to focus on that and get herself in a position, both physically and mentally, where she feels ready to play for England and she's not quite there yet, then don't throw her in. Don't put her in that position where she's taken two steps forward and then she goes three steps back by throwing her into that environment. Give her the time that she needs. Allow her to keep doing what she's doing with Manchester United. And when she and only she is ready to be in that England squad, then call her up. Because her form, she's good enough. Absolutely. She should be in there on form. But until she feels ready and she's, you know, in the right place to do that, let her play for Man United. Let her do what she wants for them.
Yeah.
And then bring her in when she's ready.
Tony Duggan back in the squad after missing England's previous two games with a thigh injury. So good news for her. Chelsea's Fran Kirby has been left out, though, to manage a knee problem. Neville said the best thing for Fran is for her to continue her recovery work at Chelsea. You spoke to Emma Hayes, didn't you, about that at the weekend?
Yeah, I spoke to Emma. You know, the reality is I think that Phil talked about players needing to be at a certain physical level. And clearly, Fran is not where he wants her to be. And I put that to Emma after the game at Lewis. And actually, she said, you know what? I think Phil's correct on that one. Fran is not where she needs to be. Emma says that we need to give her time. She doesn't think it's going to be until after Christmas, until we see Fran really back at her full peak. And ultimately, it's a similar situation to Leah. If Fran is not, you know, where she needs to be physically, then give her the time to get herself there. And then when she's ready, call her back in. And I'm sure she will be as big a threat for England as she has been in the past.
Well, here to look ahead to that fixture is the BBC's Tom Garry. Welcome on, Tom. A huge game for Phil Neville, really. Let's just remind ourselves of the epic things that he's been saying going into this game that means he's going to have to get a serious performance out of his side. Phil specials, the risks we took last year in terms of rotations. I don't see many managers in world football doing that in the women's game. I've got bravery that no other coach has, so thank you, lucky stars. I think with the players we've got, we can go far. A lot of pressure on Phil's shoulders, Tom.
Yes, I think the pressure's on to deliver a result, Kate. I mean, I think after the World Cup, there was perhaps a little bit of allowance for some sort of mini hangover. There was no real pressure on those friendlies. But now we've got such a big, exciting crowd anticipated. I think the pressure is on to deliver it so that those fans are entertained and want to come back. It's such a big chance to inspire all of those fans. And I think the worst thing would be a disappointing performance that leaves a percentage of that audience not really wanting to come again. That would be such a shame because the squad is so full of talent.
It's going to be tough opposition as well, isn't it? Looking at Germany, their four European qualifier games coming into this, they scored 31 goals, conceded none. So it's going to be quite a tough task.
Yes, and let's not forget, they're still ranked second in the world. So this is a formidable team and one who England have had very difficult results against in the past, historically, with a couple of rare exceptions, of course, and famously the bronze medal match in Canada 4 years ago. But traditionally, we don't do very well against Germany. And 5 years ago, when England played Germany at Wembley, of course, it didn't end well there. 3-0 defeat. And hopefully we'll see nothing like that again this time. But England can be a good match for them, that's for sure. England have got such fantastic players. They just need to be confident and show some of the form they're showing for their clubs, for their country.
Tom, what do you think is the most important thing from Saturday, the result or the performance? Because a grinded out 1-0 that's a bit of a snore fest, I don't think is going to, as you say, have those people coming back for another game. Whereas if it's an entertaining 1-0 defeat where England absolutely batter Germany and the Germans maybe sneak it, may well win a lot of people over. I'm just kind of interested in your view on that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that, Kieran, because I think the fact that the game's entertaining would be a lot more important, and also to see the England players playing with a bit of freedom and confidence. I think, you know, it would be far better for England to lose, say, in a high scoring game than to grind out a 0-0 or a narrow 1-0, as you say, because I think it's such a rare opportunity. And I appreciate that Phil Neville will probably only be talking about getting the result, and that's the professional job that he'll be doing for understandable reasons. But I think we've got a bigger picture here, and this is such an opportunity. And I hope the players don't have the nerves that will naturally come with such an occasion. We really hope to see them express themselves, playing with real freedom, playing some of the football that we perhaps saw in their better displays in the World Cup, perhaps in that quarterfinal against Norway in particular, when they looked so confident on the ball. That's the sort of thing we'd love to see on Saturday. I'd also really like to see Phil look to cement his strongest side. I appreciate the need for rotation earlier, but I'd like to see him make a call on his first choice goalkeeper in particular. I know that both Mary Earps and Ellie Robuck got a game in the last round of internationals, both playing very, very well for their clubs. And Carly Telford, I think, sadly, is out the picture now because she's just not playing frequently enough for Chelsea. So I think it'd be a good opportunity for Phil to say either Mary or Ellie is my number one and give them a real run in the team now.
Tom Garry from the BBC speaking to us there. And after their exploits at Wembley, it's a trip to the Czech Republic on Tuesday. So we'll talk more about that on next week's show.
Well, away from the Lionesses, it has to be the worst kept secret in football, doesn't it? But Vlatko Andonovski's was finally announced as the man. In fact, it's quite a mouthful, that, isn't it? Vlatko seems very Transylvanian to me, as we've been digesting and having lots of Halloween chats. But he is the man to take over as USA coach, taking the mantle, of course, from Jill Ellis. Big pants to fill, that's for sure.
Big pants. Have you just done a Lindsay?
Big shoes to fill.
Did you mean shoes to fill?
Yes. Big pants and big shoes is what I meant to say. Nothing against you, Jill, and the size of your pants, by the way.
I'm going to call it Bridget from now on.
But Kieran, a little bit on Vlatko, please, from you.
Yeah, the right man for the job. And I think when you looked at you watched the press conference that he did alongside Kate Markgraf, who's the general manager, they did a very thorough interview process, and he came out on top and with flying colours. Very, very highly respected.
He comes from Rain.
He comes from Reign FC, yeah, but he also won league titles at FC Kansas City before that.
So he's won the title there twice?
He's won the title twice with FC Kansas City, and this season he was named the NWSL Coach of the Year after getting the Reign into the playoffs despite a horrendous list of injuries this season.
Can he do the same job as Jill or better or what?
Genuinely, I think he can do a better job. I really do. And that's saying something considering Jill's won back-to-back World Cups. Vlatko is so highly respected. You just have to look at the social media posts that went out from players, the respect that they have for him. And what's really nice about Vlatko is I've had the opportunity to meet him a couple of times. He's just a really nice guy as well. He, you know, there's this saying that nice guys come second or nice guys come last. He is a nice guy and he's got the best job in women's football, in my view. The US job is
the biggest in the world. And hopefully they don't come second at the next World Cup.
Not for him. Well, it'd be nice if they came second to England, wouldn't
it?
But no, I think he's absolutely the right man. His record speaks for itself and the respect that he has from the players. And that's one of the biggest things. You know, you've got real big personalities in that US women's national team. And you have to manage that as well as you do the what's going on the field. And I think with the respect that he has from the players, I think he was the right person and he'll do a good job.
Everyone intrigued can get some early glimpses because he takes charge of the next games against Sweden and Costa Rica next week. Well, that is it for today's show. We've run out of time, peeps. Don't miss Thursday's Offside Rule show. We're going to have plenty more for you with that. You don't want to miss it. Remember, we are on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow us at Offside Rule Pod.
And on offsiderulepodcast.com, our website, there's a Conti Cup roundup from Jesse Parker Humphries and a roundup on Europe as well. Martin Whiteley reports on plenty of goals in the top divisions in Germany and France and what could be the last round of games in the Spanish league for a while with that impending strike action in the Primera Division over pay and conditions.
I'm sure that's something that Kieran would like to get his teeth into another time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Until next week, listeners. Bye.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And for more from the Offside Rule, head to our website, offsiderulepodcast.com.